You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. And if this episode doesn't help you ditch fear-based eating, well then just butter my butt and call me a biscuit. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am over the moon excited about today's sponsor. Friend, this is my dream sponsor. The, oh my God, is this real life sponsor? The sponsor I've been dreaming about since I was a little girl winning card-giving holidays with her reliable tearjerkers, ending fights with soul-spilling letters left on people's pillows, and surviving college by avoiding all test-taking classes and taking only essay-writing ones. No, this sponsor is not a pen or a computer or those yellow Papermate SharpWriter number 2 mechanical pencils that you turn the tip of, which I've used religiously for 2 decades. This sponsor is the thing I've been writing up to my whole life. It's my book. My first freaking real life will live in stores if stores ever open up again, but can live on your shelf right this second book. Party in Your Plants, which has been called in an Amazon review as the best plant-based book ever, as well as a cookbook that's way more than a cookbook, and a plant party heaven. Readers have also said that it's the best healthy living guide for your kitchen that you must purchase pronto. And so I'm here to tell you that you can promptly purchase Party in Your Plants, 100 plus plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies to help you eat healthier without hating your life, anywhere books are safely and sanitarily sold. PartyInYourPlants.com will take you to all the major retailers, or you can just hop your fingers over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, or Walmart to buy yourself and your best friend and their best friend a copy today. That's partyinyourplants.com to grab a copy or 19 of my book that Amazon readers say you must add to your cookbook stack ASAP because it gets all the thumbs ups. When it comes to the good old social distance plant partying, Tara Kemp is the guest of honor. Tara specializes in something so, so important and so, so valuable that I have the utmost respect for this gal. She helps women struggling with eating disorders recover through a plant-based eating philosophy. Having struggled with an eating disorder herself, which, by the way, she attributes to crippling anxiety that was left untreated, Tara, who is pursuing her PhD in psychosocial health, knows a thing or two about exerting control over food and the mental health roots in disordered eating. Her story is an empowering one. But the empowerment doesn't stop with this special woman's journey. We also chatted about deciding how you want to interact with food, movement, and in deciding which information you live by and which info you take in with a grain of celery salt. I might as well have called this one the Suit Yourself episode. Tara, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
I'm so happy to be here.
I am thrilled to be here because you do something so powerful and so unique, which is you specialize in plant-based eating disorder recovery. Boom. That is just power right there. Plant-based eating disorder recovery. How did you get into this? There has to be a story and I'd love to hear it.
Yes, of course, there is a story. There's always a story. So the short version of the story, and we can get into a longer version, although I tend to be long-winded, so we'll see how short I can
make that you
this.
Have multiple versions. Can we do the medium version?
Sure. So basically, I struggled with disordered eating when I was younger. In early high school, kind of that transition between middle school to high school. And I had been a gymnast when I was younger, which for me wasn't the start of the disordered eating. It was more so that my anxiety, I kind of always had anxiety when I was younger, and the anxiety got really bad and got to a point where I started being afraid of the skills. And long story short, I ended up quitting gymnastics. And just that process of losing that identity. Like gymnastics had been my life. It's like every, you know, afternoon after school, I'm at practice with all of my friends and teammates. And then on the weekends, I'm always traveling to different meets. And so losing that identity and losing that community left me in this like identity crisis. And it made me feel very out of control and like life was chaotic and confusing. And so, you know, I started controlling food. And so that was kind of my story with the eating disorder. And, you know, as I was going through recovery, which it was never like clinically diagnosed, I was never admitted into any type of inpatient or outpatient treatment. It was something that I kind of suffered internally. And, you know, all of my closest family members knew that something was wrong, and they did their best to help. But it wasn't something that I ever got professional help for specifically regarding the disordered eating. But what did happen is that I went to a number of dietitians or doctors, and every time I was met with advice that didn't sit well with me. And it just kind of always felt like, because, you know, through the disordered eating, I started really paying attention to health. And while that, you know, in some ways was coming from a fear-based mentality, it also made me really appreciate food in this new way. And I was just craving this relationship with food that was healthy and holistic and nourishing. And a lot of the messages that I was getting was like, oh, just, you know, eat an extra serving of ice cream every night, or like, oh, just whatever. And a lot of it was disconnecting me from my body, even from the standpoint of like, I lost my period and I went to the doctor and they were like, oh, okay, we'll just put you on birth control.
Oh.
And it kind of just felt like no matter where I was going, I wasn't getting support that felt, I didn't feel seen or heard in what I was wanting to do. I was wanting to be like, how can I, you know, connect more deeply to my body? How can I eat in a way that is nourishing and healthy for me? How can I do what's best for my body? And the advice that I was getting didn't really resonate. And then the key thing also is that no one ever really said, well, what's underneath this? You know, because disordered eating is not a physical disorder. It's not a physical illness. There are physical symptoms, but it's a mental illness. And so anytime that someone is struggling with food or struggling with their body, it's not about the food. It's about some sort of underlying emotional discomfort that is not being addressed. And that was never brought to my attention. No one ever said, hey, like, how are you doing? Or, you know, what's been going on for you lately? Or how are you feeling? Or like, just that emotional piece was never addressed. And so I never really decided to look into that either. And, you know, over the years, just kind of on my own, I was able to come to a much better place with food. And for me, a plant-based diet was a huge, huge part of that. So I was largely in a much better place by the time I found veganism. But finding veganism was this hugely transformative experience for me, because it was like I had finally found this space of harmony that I was seeking, where these foods that are nourishing for your body, like no matter what you do within the realm of plant-based foods, you're eating foods that are taking care of you. Yes. And that are also taking care of the planet and taking care of the animals and making a political statement. And just like, it felt very purposeful and it felt very beautiful. And it felt like, okay, like this is how I'm going to take care of my body and take care of the world around me and interact with food in a way that is only positive and loving and nourishing and compassionate. And that felt so good, because around me, it was very normalized. And to this day, it's very normalized to feel guilt around food, to like skip a meal or whatever it is. And it was just so frustrating to me to be in that space of feeling like I was, like what I saw around me as normal still didn't feel right. Like I didn't want to be a quote normal eater, because what I saw as normal didn't look healthy or good to me. So finding veganism was just this beautiful, transformative time of really healing that relationship with food, because it gave me a way to connect more deeply to it and in turn connect more deeply to myself, my values, how I want to interact with the world. But then fast forward a few years into my vegan journey, I still had never really addressed the root symptoms of why I had anxiety or obsessive compulsive tendencies or turned to control in the first place. And so then, you know, as life tends to do, if, you know, shit hit the fan in life and all sorts of personal things kind of came crashing down at the same time, and my anxiety got really bad. And I was far enough into my healing journey with food that I didn't want to turn to food anymore, but it started coming out in other ways where I suddenly had, you know, these obsessive compulsive tendencies coming up around contamination and germs and toxins and things like that. And I just, it got overwhelming. And so I started doing therapy, and going into psychotherapy was like the best thing that ever happened to me. And it made me look at like, what are the root things that never got addressed? Like, why did that eating disorder ever even come up in the first place? And it was the first time that I had ever like fully admitted out loud to someone that I even dealt with disordered eating. And because I had always kind of like denied it within my family, even though everyone knew, and I never told any of my friends. Like, sometimes I might mention like, oh yeah, like I used to be kind of weird about food, but I would never fully own it. And that's because there was so much shame around it. I thought that that made me, you know, weak, and that made me broken. And, you know, being someone who was so passionate about plant-based eating, I didn't want it to ever seem like I had ever struggled. And so going through that process of recognizing the root causes of why I was ever in pain in the first place, why I had to turn to food as a coping mechanism because I didn't have the tools for that type of emotional discomfort, I didn't have the resources or resilience at that time, really was the ultimate healing. And that's when I was like, oh, this is where it's at. And at that time, I was working in Washington, D.C. with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and just learning so much about plant-based nutrition. I was helping to lead these community classes for plant-based eating and was helping to organize their summer nutrition conference. And after that period of time, I ended up working for Forks Over Knives. And so throughout those years where I was developing in my own personal journey all of these realizations, I was also seeing it reflected in the people that I was working with, whether those people were underweight, overweight, trying to reduce their cholesterol or reverse their diabetes or gain weight or improve their athletic performance, whatever it was. You know, I was working with people of all different kinds. What I noticed is that so often people's struggles about food or what they're trying to gain through changing their food is not at all about the food. We look to food, we look to a certain meal plan, or we look to a certain way of eating or a certain type of exercise even to try and change our bodies. And that's not usually coming from a healthy place. It's ultimately coming from a place of low self-worth or low self-esteem or feeling lost and trying to control something, seeking that control. Or very often people are dealing with, you know, emotional numbing, feeling like they don't have the resources to deal with things. And that's where the binge eating comes in. And so I was just seeing this reflected in so many ways in other people and just realizing, wow, like, disordered eating is actually the norm. And so much of what people are seeking through changing their diet is not to change their diet. It's to feel better about themselves, to have a sense of purpose, to have a sense of connection, and to feel like they have that, you know, capability to feel empowered. And so basically all of that helped me to realize, you know, prior to a lot of this work, I had been thinking that eventually someday I wanted to be a dietitian. And I have lots of friends who are dietitians, and I love dietitians. They are so important and so needed. And I realized that the space that I really wanted to contribute was helping people to deal with the emotional and psychological underpinnings that lead them to have a disordered relationship with food in the first place. And so that's where my work kind of turned. And as you know, I worked with Mastering Diabetes for a couple of years as well. And that was amazing.
Yeah.
And so then when I came to get my PhD, I started really working on focusing on the emotional and psychological relationship that we have with ourselves and how that in turn reflects our relationship with food. And as you probably know, in the world of eating disorder recovery, a plant-based diet is largely not allowed, especially a vegan diet. When it comes to,
I did not know that.
Okay, so yeah, outpatient facilities are a little bit more lenient, but in terms of inpatient, as of a year and a half ago, there were zero facilities within the United States that if you wanted to be in inpatient recovery, so having like residential care for your eating disorder, there were zero facilities that allowed you to do that while maintaining your vegan diet.
So that you, they would force you to eat like eggs or dairy or chicken?
Yeah. So you would have to.
I mean, you can be vegan in prison. That's crazy.
Yeah. And
wow. So it was kind of just, what was the reasoning?
It was, you know, kind of like the norm within that paradigm was that if you are struggling with disordered eating, then a vegan diet is a manifestation of that disordered
like
eating.
It's too
that
rigid?
It's a form of restriction. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to remove all rules. And
eek.
And I get
That's a big capital eek.
Yeah.
For me.
And to an extent, you know, I can see where that is coming from.
Yeah,
you know, they want to remove all good or bad rules. Labels. They want to remove fear from the equation. And that's so important in that process. But it also does a great disservice because someone who truly values veganism from, like I said, like a personal value standpoint, from an ethical standpoint, or just wanting to interact with food in that way. And it's not coming from a space of fear. It's coming from a place of love, which I'll get into this later, but that can absolutely be convoluted. It can be a little bit of both.
What, fear and love?
Yeah. You know, wanting to eat vegan from a healthy standpoint in certain ways of wanting to take care of your body and want to support the environment and not hurt animals, and know that you also want to lose weight, or, you know, you're afraid of oil, or you're afraid of processed foods, and you have this like intense fear of having like any ounce of that. It can absolutely be muddied. But essentially, you know, it's doing a huge disservice to not allow people to be vegan when in recovery, because a lot of people who need care but want to maintain that value system then just don't seek support. And so they're left not having spaces to get help. And so as of today, there is one recovery center named Alsana, and they have 5 locations throughout the US, and they allow people to come in and eat a vegan diet while they're in recovery. And they help you to explore what that means for you and what parts of that vegan diet are healthy versus unhealthy for you. And it's really amazing. And so that's what my research is focusing on for my dissertation within my PhD program. Mm. So I'm working with that. And because, you know, anecdotally from women who have gone through recovery and eat a vegan diet, kind of like I was saying to you at the beginning, it can be incredibly healing to take the focus away from the calories or from, you know, categorizing food as just this thing that you eat that affects your body. It's like it's taking the value of it and the relationship of it away from yourself and looking at the bigger picture and connecting you to something greater than yourself and giving it purpose and meaning beyond you. And it connects you to a movement. It connects you to a mission. And that is so healing. And also, you know, even from a nutrition standpoint, understanding like how to actually nourish your body and becoming, you know, taking this role of a caretaker to your body and thinking, how can I nourish my body in the best way? How can I take care of it in the best way? Because so often we live in a world where people are trying to control their bodies. They are overriding their body's hunger cues or messages and trying to live in that space of control rather than being in communication and listening and taking care of it. And so that's a lot of the work that I do through, like I said, my research, through my coaching program, Reconnect Academy, is helping people to step into that space of reconnecting with themselves and their values and being a caretaker to themselves, developing that self-worth, self-acceptance, self-compassion, self-love, all of that good, good, positive self-relationship
stuff.
Yeah, you know, turning inward and doing the inner work and understanding what is the best way that I can connect with food in order to live not only as a caretaker for myself, but also in alignment with the values and show up in the world that I the way that I want to.
Damn.
That is the medium length story of how I got into what I do.
I love it. The medium length. Okay. I took 5,000 notes. Here we go. First question from that. Veganism or plant-basedism and orthorexia. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is a fine line. So as we're talking about, you know, not being allowed to be plant-based in a recovery facility, I mean, eek with the orthorexia issues. Yes. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this. So veganism is not automatically orthorexia.
Let's define. Can you define orthorexia?
Yes. Okay. So orthorexia is an unhealthy, disordered obsession with eating healthy. So there is nothing inherently wrong with wanting to eat nutritious foods, foods with high nutrient density. But when someone is dealing with orthorexia, that becomes a constant daily stressor. It becomes something that is holding them back from maintaining relationships. It becomes something that is anxiety inducing, where eating and making food choices becomes stressful. And mm-hmm. so it basically inhibits your capacity to live life in the way that you want to feel freedom, to feel peace. And yeah, it's when you're living in that constant state of internal stress.
It's like eating plants chaotically, right? It's just like you're not doing it from a joyful, lighthearted, easy breezy way, like, ooh, I'm going to eat some plants. It's like you're really stressed out. It's like you said, it's impairing your functioning,
right?
Your interaction with other humans and yourself.
Yeah. So basically, you know, on the spectrum of motivation, there are fear-based motivations and there are love-based motivations, and there's a lot in between. But orthorexia moves you further.
I'll cross this off my notes.
But orthorexia is placing you very much on the side of the spectrum towards fear. And so, you know, if someone is dealing with orthorexia, then veganism is disordered. It's not something that is bringing them joy. It's not something that feels free and exciting. And maybe in certain ways, like I said, it can be very nuanced. Someone can absolutely go vegan and care about saving animals and like love the idea of living in harmony with the earth and using like less resources and things like that. But if on a daily basis, it's causing them stress to decide what to eat, like what is the perfect meal to eat? Or what if I, you know, go to this person's house and have this meal that isn't exactly what I had planned out in my mind? Or, you know, just the overthinking and the constant anxiety and stress. And the thing is, there's not one specific way of eating that equals orthorexia. Like two people, I always use this example, but two people can sit down to the same meal where let's say it's like, you know, you've got a Buddha bowl and there's like, you know, some roasted sweet potatoes and some quinoa and black beans and avocado and greens and whatever. And so one person can sit down to that meal and be like, oh my goodness, I love this food. This makes me feel so good, blah, blah, blah. Like this makes you so happy to cook this food, to eat this food. And they're like enjoying it with their friends, whatever. And another person, sure, maybe they like those foods, but they've also chosen them because they think they are the ultimate healthiest. And they feel like, you know, they wouldn't be able to eat something else. It's like a very calculated decision of like, okay, I had this much of this food and I can't have more than a cup of this, or I can't have this if it was cooked in this way, or, you know, it just gets very stressful. And it's not something that was made just with pure joy. It's something that was, there's a lot of stress and fear involved. Like maybe they're not choosing these foods just because they love them. They're also choosing these foods because they're avoiding foods that freak them out. And so it's really, you know, you and I both know my best friend, Robbie, and he eats only fruits and vegetables. He is raw vegan. And, you know, for a lot of people that could be orthorexia, that could be disordered. Mm-hmm. But for him and for some people, it's not. Like he freaking loves the way that he eats and he does not feel restricted. You know, he is consciously choosing that every day from a space of joy and love. And there are people who could be eating a lot more, you know, quote, unrestricted than that. And, you know, restriction is a very subjective term, but there could be someone who is eating more, you know, minimally processed foods or even highly processed foods and still be dealing with orthorexia. It just depends on the relationship to the food and the motivations behind the choices. And so orthorexia is often conflated with veganism, and it is a valid connection because it can develop, especially within, you know, it's hard. You and I both, you know, we care about nutrition and we look to these luminaries like, you know, Dr. Esselstyn and Dr. Greger and Dr. T. Colin Campbell and Dr. McDougall. And, you know, I could name a whole litany of people. And now there's, you know, the younger generations coming up of amazing humans who are really, I don't want to use the word preaching, but teaching and educating about how to optimize your health by eating a whole food plant-based diet. And there is value and validity to everything they are sharing. And when this movement was first getting started, a lot of what these physicians and researchers were dealing with was people who were really, really sick and who needed to eat in a therapeutic way to reverse disease. And what is needed for therapeutic reversal of disease is very different than what is needed for maintenance. And I think that with the expansion of veganism and with the rise of veganism within young people who are athletic and, you know, premenopausal women and who are, you know, already in a healthy state, who don't need to reverse disease, you don't need the exact same guidelines. And so to say, you know, Dr. McDougall is often quoted to say, the fat you eat is the fat you wear. And, you know, that can be a really dangerous statement for someone who is, you know, a young woman who needs a certain amount of fat in order to maintain healthy hormone levels. Or, you know, Dr. Esselstyn standing up on stage screaming no oil. And again, I adore the Esselstyn family. I spent 5 years going to their plant stock events and helping out, and have visited Rip's family in Austin. And like, I love them and I think they've done amazing work. And, and even, you know, I say this because I know Dr. Esselstyn, and I know that he would agree with me here, you know, with his grandkids, he's not like, you are not allowed to have any oil. If someone is dealing with heart disease and they are knocking at death's door, yes, like do every single thing possible to nurse your body back to health. But if you are a young person who's largely healthy at this moment, if you are active, if you're an athlete, you know, optimizing for someone who's in maintenance mode is actually different. It's not like what is needed for therapeutic healing is optimal for everyone. And I think that's where some of the orthorexia can tie in, is because people are listening to these recommendations. And I'm not even saying that it's on the responsibility of these physicians to make these qualifications. But what I am saying is that it can be easily taken in certain ways for people who don't need to go to that, you know, quote, extreme. Mm-hmm. And it's just nuanced. And it really comes back to allowing for flexibility, allowing for individuality, reconnecting with yourself and recognizing what is best for my needs. Like for myself, for example, like I run thin, like just naturally. My parents are relatively thin. My family is very active. I'm a runner. I have to eat in a different way than someone else who is maybe like postmenopausal and, you know, trying to reduce their weight for their health, or, you know, has type 2 diabetes or whatever. Like for me, what is healthy and what is going to most optimally fuel me is going to be different. And also, you know, we all just have different preferences in terms of what we truly enjoy. And that's part of healthy eating and a healthy relationship with food. Yeah. It's like, what makes you feel your best? What tastes the best to you, you know? And taking away this idea that there's one particular way of eating that is ideal. I mean, you can even look at the blue zones where people live the longest. Mm. The differences in the macronutrient ratio there is huge. You know, there are places like Okinawa where they're having like 6% of calories from fat. And then there's somewhere like Icaria, Greece, and they're having like close to 40% calories from fat. And so it comes down to eat mostly plants, eat mostly unprocessed foods. And whatever way of doing that feels best to you is ideal for you. And it comes down to intuitive eating, mindful eating, being a caretaker to your body, connecting to yourself, connecting to your values, and just living in an extension of that without making it something that determines your worth or that is based in fear, and really reconnecting to that loving relationship with yourself and the world around you.
Ooh, yes. Preach. Party in those plants. Pardon the interruption, but this is a sorry, not sorry situation because my interruption is to tell you about one of my favorite plant products on the planet, Four Sigmatic Mushrooms. I'm already so hooked on their magic mushrooms of many varieties. I love their hot teas that make lion's mane, chaga, reishi, and cordyceps taste great. And I love their lattes like matcha, chai, and golden milk. But I'm here to hopefully get you inspired to try their coffees since they're so much smarter for your body than non-Four Sigmatic coffees. To their organic coffee, they add lion's mane mushrooms, whose claim to fame is supporting our brain, and they add chaga, which is wonderful for our oh-so-cherished immune system. Because you listen to this podcast, thank you so much for that, by the way, you get to save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroomy stuff you'll want by going to their site, foursigmatic.com, and using code PARTYINMYPLANTS. Or you can just type into your little type box, FOUR, Sigmatic, SIGMATIC.com/PARTYINMYPLANTS for the automatic 15% off. Woohoo! So how do you begin to help somebody do this? If someone isn't, you know, partying in their plants, if they're not, you know, eating their lettuce with a light grip, if they're white knuckling their kale, you know, I can do go on for days. But if they're listening to other people instead of their own body, I mean, there's such a fine line because yes, sometimes it's good to get information from these doctors and experts on stuff. But at the end of the day, we have to listen to our own bods and eat in a way that is doable in our own lives. Mm-hmm. So it's so tough when we're seeing like memes on Instagram that's like no oil. And then it's like, but you know, I eat oil, like I need to saute, I'm going to oil. Like, how do you begin to help people through your academy and the work that you do find, you know, peace with a plant-based diet while letting go of a restrictive mentality?
Yeah. So it ultimately starts kind of what we were talking about before with the relationship that you have with yourself. So a lot of people are often surprised when they join Reconnect Academy that like we spend probably, let me think about the actual schedule. We spend 5 weeks going through just your relationship with yourself before we even start talking about food, really.
Some people must be so pissed. They're like, what the hell? I bought this for the food. I don't want to talk about myself.
I know.
My mommy problems.
yeah. But
how long is the whole program?
12 weeks.
Okay. So it's almost half though. That's great. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So what are you talking about with yourself?
So the first part of the program is called Recognizing the Roots. And so we spend a few weeks just looking back at how did you get to where you are? Why do you have these certain ideas about yourself? What are the limiting beliefs that you carry? What, you know, we do the classic, you know, inner child work that is kind of a hot topic these days. And I teach people how to build self-awareness. That's really the key of just connecting and building that relationship with yourself so that you can act from a place of honesty, you know, radical honesty with yourself and bringing non-judgmental awareness. So I'm a really big proponent of self-compassion. Kristen Neff's work, she's like the leading researcher in mindful self-compassion. And I very much teach to her principles of being able to look at yourself with honesty, with awareness, with compassion, with non-judgment, so that you can see where you need to make changes in order to best respect and honor yourself, but to do that in a way that doesn't judge you and doesn't shame yourself, that just, you know, accepts where you're at, but also acknowledges where you have room to grow. And so we do a lot of that in those first couple of weeks of just like building that loving, caring relationship with yourself and that self-awareness, because you can't make changes if you don't have the awareness to know where those changes need to be made. So that's the first part. And like I said, recognizing the roots of where did this come from and how did I get here? Why do I have these ideas about myself or my worth or who I need to be, what the shoulds are? And so that's the first part. And from there, we then flip forward to looking at envisioning and embodying your best self. And so I call that rewriting your story and really looking at who are you beneath all of the masks? Who do you ultimately want to be What are the values that drive you? What are the characteristics that you want to embody? What is your mission here in life? And as you become more clear on those things, it gives you a sense of who you truly are, like what your personal inner truth is. And so from there, that's when we tie in food, because food should really just be an extension of all of those things. And so, you know, the next section, of course, is reconnecting with your body. And like I said, embracing that sense of being a caretaker to yourself. And so learning how to tune into your body's signals and internal cues, recognizing how to, like I said, eat intuitively and mindfully. And then we focus on food. And it's like, okay, now given all of this foundation that we have, what is your personal truth about how you want to interact with food? And the final section of that module is writing your own personal food manifesto. Mm-hmm. So everyone has a different way of interacting with food and what it means for them. For some people, it might be really community-based. They want to make it a way to connect with other people. And so, you know, that will be a different relationship than, you know, food is my way to support my body and healing from my inflammatory arthritis. Or that is different from food is my way to interact with other cultures, or food is my way to express my creativity in cooking. You know, for some people, food is just fuel so that they can live out their passion or, you know, support the world and be of service in the way that they want to. And that's going to look very different than someone who is like, food is my art form. You know, for one person that might be like, yeah, whatever is quickest and easiest and most nutritious that still tastes good. Like if I'm zapping a potato in the microwave and throwing some salsa and beans and avocado on top, amazing. And for another person, it's like, I'm going to spend 2 hours in the kitchen, like playing and building this new recipe archive and making it really beautiful. And that's, you know, anxiety inducing for me, or that is like creative play for me. And so it really comes down to, you know, what does food mean to you? How do you want to use food in your life to live out your truth, your values, and to support you in being the person that you want to be and in interacting with this world in the way that you want to do so? So we get really deep.
I couldn't love that more. I mean, the first time you told your medium length story, I underlined interact with food, and I've not heard that said that way before. And I think it is profound and incredible, because I talk often about how in culinary school, I went to a plant-based culinary school, everyone except for me and a former NBA athlete were artists. They were jewelers, jewelry makers, painters, just types of artists. And I was in there like, yo, I just want to eat the plants so I can feel good. And Shandon, who was a former NBA player, was like, yo, I just want to fuel myself. And it was incredibly fascinating. I did not have the words to say interact with food. That's exactly what I was picking up on, though. Like, huh, all these people see food as art. They really care about the presentation. They really find being in the kitchen this like meditative, awesome, like artistic, creative experience. And I'm like, I just want to get in, get out, and eat something that tastes good, it makes me feel good, but I want to get back on with my day. Mm-hmm. And I've become much more outspoken about that since my book came out, because a lot of my recipes, I mean, all my recipes are like that. They're just like, blend some stuff in a blender, pour it on pasta, and bounce. Yep. There's a lot of books that aren't like that. And a lot of books are more into like these lengthy things and procedures and ingredients. And it's so important, is what I'm trying to say, like you said, to figure out how you want to interact with food. Mm-hmm. Two people could be plant-based, but you could interact with food completely differently. And I just feel so lit up right now. It's just so empowering to think about it that way.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's a barrier often, is that someone will look at another person, you know, someone who is wanting to try a plant-based diet, they'll look at another person and be like, oh, like they spend so much time in the kitchen, or, oh, like they do it this way. And it's like, you don't have to do it that way.
Or like, to eat a plant-based diet, you have to spend all the time in the kitchen, because it's supposed to be beautiful and swishes on your plates and, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's like, no, you get to choose how you interact with food.
Totally. And like, even to the extent of someone saying like, oh, but like, you know, when I travel, like I want to be able to eat food from different cultures. And it's like, okay, when you travel, like then you take away the rule. Like, you know, and that's something like my sister, you know, she is vegan at home, and you know, she prefers to eat vegan, but also when she's with other people or when she's out at restaurants or like at a friend's house or whatever, she is a lot more lenient. And, you know, for me, that's different because it's a different, our value systems around it are different. And so for me, like I draw lines where she doesn't, but like, that's okay. Like we're both doing it in exactly our truth and mm-hmm. they're both perfect and beautiful for each of us.
I love that. And again, with the values, I mean, that's so good to apply values to food. I mean, we apply values to family. Mm-hmm. We apply values to work. You know, some people are happy working, you know, all the time. And that's their value, is to earn and progress and climb and grow. And some people value family time more or leisure time or whatever. Some people value traveling. Some people don't. Mm-hmm. Why do we not talk about this in the context of food?
Yes, exactly. And it makes you so much more confident in your decisions, because if you're just doing it because you heard one person say you should, like, you know, I see this all the time with intermittent fasting, and it's like someone's like, oh yeah, like I woke up so hungry, but I need to wait until 10 a.m. to eat. And it's like, why? Mm. Like you are a healthy human. You don't have anything that you need to do that for. You just heard someone say it was good for you. If your body doesn't thrive that way, you don't need to. Like, that's not a value-based decision. Mm. And so it's just important to understand, like, why am I making this choice? And does it truly matter to me? Does it hold meaning? Because if it holds meaning, it's not going to be stressful. It's going to bring you joy and it's going to feel aligned. And so you want to make choices that are in alignment with you.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, many times, yes. No, but for something like intermittent fasting, which is a great example, we hear about it a lot. We're seeing, you know, again, on the swiping on the Instagram, intermittent fasting, eat the window, blah, blah. I've had 1,000 people on the podcast who are like, upon, you know, just in the interview, somehow it comes up. Oh, I highly recommend intermittent fasting. Okay, intermittent fasting, blah, blah. Okay, so you hear about it. You then try it out. At what point do you suggest one say, no, this isn't for me? Or does one not even try it if they hear someone talk about it? Like, how do we, you know, navigate that? Because we are getting so much of our food information from other sources. And then at some point we will try it, or, I mean, I don't personally try most things, but a lot of people do. That's your choice. Do whatever you want. I'm happy chilling my own way. But then at what point with that example, are you like, okay, you know, I'm not going to force myself to wait till 10 anymore?
Yeah. So I would say before you even try that process, ask yourself why you want to.
Thank you. Thank you. You heard it, you know, first, folks. No, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, I don't even do that shit. I'm just like, no, I do what I want.
Right. Amen.
Suck it.
You know, and because it comes down to, you know, so often you hear something and, or even if it's like, you should be sprouting all of your seeds, or you should be, and it's like, okay, like, does that feel fun and exciting?
No.
And does that feel like something that like, will work within the way that you want to interact with food? You know, going back to that, like I said, that manifesto approach of like, how do I want to interact with food? Or is that something that you now are like, oh man, now there's this other thing that I should be doing. I'm going to try it. And, you know, and even if you decide that you are doing it for a reason that feels good to you, if you try it and your body is perpetually telling you this doesn't work for me, listen to your body. Like our bodies are so much more wise than our minds. We think, you know, we are a very science-driven and mental-based society, and we like to think that we can outsmart things, whether it's climate change or whether it's our bodies. And so often, you know, people are like, oh, like I'm hungry, so I'm going to drink some tea to like curb my hunger. It's like, dude, if your body is hungry, the reason it has that hunger cue is because you need food. You know, and obviously there's, you know, emotional eating components where it's like, okay, like, and that's where the self-awareness comes in. Like, am I hungry, but also feeling really sad and low and embarrassed about something that happened today? And do I have resources to deal with that? And, you know, is that part of this? Or am I truly just hungry and sad today? Like, and also just taking the pressure away from the situation, like, we're all going to experience emotional eating at certain points. We're all going to eat past the point of fullness sometimes. And like, that's okay. It doesn't mean anything about you. It's not something that needs to induce shame or, you know, lead to guilt or embarrassment. Like, we're all just human. We're all just like an imperfect mess trying our best, you know?
Especially when we eat like three at least you know, 5 times a day.
Right.
Like, it's not like occasionally when I jump rope, I trip on the rope. I jump rope once a year. Like, you know, like we're eating like 100 times, you know, a day. No, not really. But you know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's going to be fluctuations in what goes down.
Yes. Allow yourself to be human. And like, you know, and also related to the fluctuations, it's okay to go through different phases of knowing what you need. Like, it's okay if you're going through a period of time where, you know, maybe you are someone who really likes to spend extra time with your meals, or you really like to have everything home cooked, but then you go through a phase where it's like, things are really busy, or like, I'm renovating my kitchen, or, you know, my parent is sick in the hospital or whatever. And it's like, if you're then, you know, eating out more often, or you're not eating in the level of way that you typically prefer to, or something's different, or even your body goes through seasons. Like, if you're going through like a fitness phase and you're super toned, and then like, you know, you're focusing on your career or your parenting or whatever, and so you don't have as much muscle tone, you're not exercising as much, or you gain weight or you lose weight, it's okay. Like, mm-hmm. We are parts of nature. Nature has seasons. We are humans that are going to have seasons, whether that's in the way that you are interacting with food or what your body looks like or any of that. It's okay to just attune yourself to what is the best way that I can take care of myself right now, given my circumstances and priorities in this season of life.
I love that. I mean, as I sit here looking at outside my office window, like, the seasons are happening. The leaves are falling. The leaves are changing and falling. And the whole, you know, we live in the woods, and the whole outdoors has completely changed from what it was just a few months ago. Because it's nature. And as you just said, we are nature. And so if we're not telling the leaves, don't change leaves.
Right.
You know,
we're like, stop.
Stay on your tree.
Stay on the tree. Yeah.
We're like, okay, cool. This is the season where the leaves change and then fall off. Mm-hmm. We have seasons too. I love that so much. Today's episode is thrilled to have an amazing sponsor, Amazing Grass, who grows and bottles amazing grasses. Their green superfood powders are an insanely tasty blend of nutritious greens, phytonutrient-packed fruits, veggies, grasses, digestive enzymes, and probiotics that I can't and do not want to live without. I am an enormous fan of their watermelon energy flavor, which I drink every single morning in 12 ounces of water, plus 2 heaping tablespoons of apple cider vinegar and a splash of honey or stevia. But they've got a massive assortment of grassy products for you to check out and fall in love with. Oh, and their effervescents. I love those too. They're so handy for traveling. And when airplane traveling was a thing, I'd always pop a hydration effervesce in my free cup of water on the plane and drink it, or drink it right in a bottle when I'd land. To make Amazing Grass even more amazing, they're offering Party in My Plants podcast listeners 30%. Yep. 30%, not some measly 10%, 30% off your Amazing Grass orders if you go to their website, amazinggrass.com, and use coupon code PLANTPARTY30 at checkout. That is PLANTPARTY30 at checkout on amazinggrass.com. Okay, I want to talk about the fitness component, because that is also something that you talk about, because in addition to eating your plants, you are a runner, as you said. Mm-hmm. So this mindset and relationship and interaction discussion also applies to our movement. So talk to me about what your experience has been with yourself and your interaction with exercise, and maybe with some common problems that you see and help people with.
Totally. So very often, you know, in the realm of food and exercise, and even just calling it exercise, like,
I know, I hate that. I don't know why I said that. I hate it. I say movement.
Yeah. I find myself shifting towards saying movement as well.
Because I always say movement.
My body loves to move. And to me, exercise sounds like one of those shoulds.
Yes. It's like, did you exercise?
Right.
Versus, I mean, I always say sweat, you know, sweat or movement. I don't know why I said exercise. Let's bleep that out. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's fine. I mean, that's like what most people
say. It's just because honestly on my paper right now says exercise. So I said exercise.
Well, and it honestly, like, this is kind of a tangent, but it makes sense. Like, when you think about the principles of intuitive eating, a lot of times people think, oh, like, if I just let go and let myself eat what I want, which, like, there are 10 principles of intuitive eating, like, just, you know, listening to your body's hunger cues is like one of them. But anyways,
I didn't like, know that.
Very often people will say, oh, like if I let myself just have free rein and do whatever I want, like I'll let myself go or I won't eat healthy. And that's so far from the truth. When people let go of the rules and restrictions that they have around eating, they very often notice that they feel really good when they eat healthy food. And so they then want to, not from a place of the should, but from a true authentic desire. And it's the same with movement. Our bodies want to move. And there are so many different ways that that can be done. You know, for some people, it's slower movement like yoga or walking. For others, it's, you know, running or cycling or endurance activities. And then there's like high intensity interval training or lifting or whatever. And there's no right and wrong. There are certainly different things that obviously have different strengths and how they affect your body and your health. But like overall, our bodies just need to move. Again, we can look at the blue zones and see they're not out there doing high intensity interval training workouts. They're not doing CrossFit. They're not even running, you know, 10 miles a day. They're gardening. They're biking from their house to their friend's house. They're walking into town to pick up something. Like they're just moving. There's not any particular, you know, specific way that it needs to happen and that it is ideal to happen. And so often I see people striving to do something that they don't fully enjoy. And anytime that we do that, number one, it's not good for our mental well-being, but number two, it's not sustainable.
And it negates the benefits. I mean, yes. If you're stressed, that's what I always say. That's my entire philosophy in my book is when you eat your plants while you're stressed, you negate a lot of the benefits of the healthy food.
Yes.
Like it's the same with exercising. If you're freaking miserable the whole time, that stress is worse for you than your elliptical.
Totally. And so often, you know, to tie food into this, so often it's just an inner equation for people. It's like, okay, if I exercise this amount today, then I can eat the amount that I normally do. Or like if I didn't exercise today, then I need to like skip that snack or skip that dessert or like whatever it is, it just becomes this equation. And exercise, and I'm going to use exercise here, is used as a way to just create more space in that equation for more food rather than seeing it as, you know, this flow state of, you know, I'm moving because my body feels good moving and I'm eating to the extent that my body, you know, needs to eat or wants to eat. And it's not a constant like weighing of, okay, I did this so I can do this or I didn't do this so I can't do this kind of thing. And so often it becomes that, and that is super stressful. And, you know, myself as, like you said, I'm a runner and I, over the past couple of years have actually shifted into like, you know, running has basically always been part of my life since I was in high school, or even middle school, actually. And it's something that I truly love. And for me, I don't really, and this is not to say that like racing is unhealthy. Like I have plenty of friends who love to enter themselves in races and push themselves in competitions. And that's like really exciting for them. But for me, running is not something that I have any like really big goals around. It's just something that I truly go out and I love to just like trail running in particular. It's just like a way for me to like be with nature and get fresh air and take my body out for a joyride. You know, it's like, wow, I have this amazing body that can move in this way. And that's fun for me. But going back to being a caretaker for my body. So when I'm doing this summer, I did train pretty heavily for an endurance event. Last month, I ran rim to rim to rim of the Grand Canyon. So in that process, I had to recognize, okay, I actually can't. So this is where like being a caretaker to yourself comes in and having that self-awareness and balancing the inner wisdom with the outer wisdom. Because the best way for me to be a caretaker for my body was not to just eat, you know, the typical amount that I normally do or just to my hunger cues. I had to actively, like I knew that I needed more food than I was even necessarily hungry for. And so that was like an extra fueling. And being a caretaker to my body was, you know, really focusing on rest days or, you know, stretching more often, doing more yoga, just, you know, being being a caretaker in a different way. And now I'm back to just like, la-di-da, I don't like track my mileage or like, I don't know, have any particular pace that I try to get or a certain amount of vertical climbing and whatever. Like it's not about calories being burned. It's not about keeping my body to look a certain way. It's something that I know I enjoy and that I also know is good for me, but you know, it's a loving relationship with my body and myself. It's not me trying to make myself be something or do something out of like control.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes so much sense. I'm the same way. I'm a runner as well. And I love the joyride, you know, thing you said there. I've never done a race or anything like that. I've always been a runner. In high school was like, well, I love running. Might as well join cross country. Join cross country. Hated it because now it took my joyride and made it a competition. And I'm already an innately competitive person. So it just added this disgusting level to my – it just ruined it. So I quit cross country and I've just run joyfully since with no main – I would say I'm like an intuitive runner where like every day I'm like, what mileage feels great today? Uh-huh. Here's the catch with the fitness, the movement, the sweating, the running, okay? I, as you do, love running. It feels phenomenal when we're out there, right? Like, but getting my booty from my home into the sneakers to the road does require a little bit of like, all right, Talia, you're going to love it. I know you don't want to do it right now. I know you'd rather just like sit on the couch. I know you're comfortable. I know, but like you're going to dig it. You know you love it. You love it. Come on, just go. 5 more minutes, you know, like, that's a little tricky, you know, where I'm now, I have a healthy relationship with it, but I could see where this line of, you know, you never regret a workout, but also giving yourself a rest day.
Right.
You know, it's so tricky. I think I don't have the words to describe the solution. And I'm wondering if maybe you do, because I've been able to do it for myself. How do you help other people figure that out?
Yeah. So here's how I explain it. And I always come back to what is the best way that you can be a caretaker to yourself and a caretaker to your body. Mm-hmm. And that looks different in different times. So sometimes being a caretaker yourself, like maybe someone's dealing with depression and they know that, okay, moving my body, getting my body into that state of momentum and energetics shifts my mood. And even though I don't want to do it right now, I know that it's ideally and ultimately what is in my best interest. So I'm going to push myself to get out the door. Or for you, you know, like, okay, this is not necessarily in this moment what I want, but I know that ultimately it's in my best interest. Mm-hmm. And you can do the same thing with a rest day where it's like, you might be like, okay, I have tons of energy today, but I know that I, you know, just did a big workout yesterday or I have something coming up soon. And so like, I really, my body, like the best way that I can be a caretaker to it is to rest. And being a caretaker doesn't mean just doing exactly what you feel in the moment or just doing what you want.
Yes.
You know, it's like self-care is a discipline. And, you know, I like to think about it in the way of parenting, and I'm not a parent yet, but you know, when you think about being a parent, you know, I was one of those kids who just wanted to wear a tutu everywhere. And, you know, I think
that's
back
so
to like
cute.
Halloween, and it was just like, you know, the idea of wearing a jacket or a sweatshirt with my tutu was like so frustrating and annoying. But
where did you grow up? Because you're in Arizona now. So
yeah, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go Steelers. My family's from Pittsburgh.
Oh, fun. Yeah. And I will say, even though now I'm in Arizona, I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona. So I'm up in the mountains. It snowed today.
Okay. So you know a jacket. I just wanted to confirm that you actually know the jacket life. All right.
I very much know the jacket life. I have like the full parka situation going on.
Valid. But continue.
But basically, you know, when you're a parent, you have to act in the best interest of your child, even if it's not exactly what they want in that moment. So like, did I have to wear a sweatshirt on Halloween? Yes, I did, because it was like 30 degrees. And to go out in just a tutu was not going to be in my best interest. And so there are times where it's not necessarily what you want in the moment. Like self-care might mean eating the cookie, or it might mean eating the salad. Self-care might mean taking the rest day, or it might mean doing the workout. Like, it just depends on the situation. And that's where you get into that state of knowing yourself and thinking, you know, asking yourself that question, what is the best way that I can take care of myself right now? And that's going to look different day to day. But if you can answer that question, that's going to point you in the direction of what is true for you.
Oh, that's so good. That's so perfect. I love that. That tutu analogy is really, that image is sticking out and I see it and it's true. It's like, that's perfect. I'm not even going to say anything more. I'm going to ask you my final planty questions. And the first one is perfectly, what is your favorite thing that you do for self-care?
So much self-care in my life.
I can tell.
I think my favorite thing that I do for self-care, and maybe this is like a cop-out answer, but I am really strong in my routines. And I've gotten to a place where I don't really make, and I'm flexible with them for sure, but I don't make exceptions. Like if I
I'm sorry, you're flexible, but you don't make exceptions.
Yes. So what I mean by that, what I mean by that is if I can tell that I am needing self-care in some way, I make sure it happens for myself. Now, if I'm staying with a friend at their house and we're having a late dinner party and, you know, I'm staying up late, so I don't have time for my typical like evening journaling and reading, like fine or whatever, but like I will take some time throughout the day to go meditate, or I will take some time throughout the day to go journal and just collect my thoughts and check in with myself. So I'd say I am very much, I take care of my own needs. And there was a time in my life where I was very, I mean, for most of my life prior to like, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I was very much a people pleaser. And so I was always trying to do what I thought other people wanted from me. And at this point, I'm really, really good at acknowledging what I need and making sure that it happens for myself. And I'm always compassionate in that. I'm not trying to, you know, disregard others' feelings or their needs, but I make sure that my needs are taken care of. And I'm highly sensitive. I know that I need more self-care probably than the average person. My routines are really strong in like day-to-day life. And what I meant by like, yeah, I know how that can seem very dichotomous when I said I'm flexible, but also I don't make exceptions. But
I love it.
But like, you know, I just spent a week, week before that, I spent a week in Colorado with a friend. And like, was I in my typical, like when I'm here in my own house, in my typical daily life, like I'm waking up at like 6 a.m. and I'm meditating for half an hour. And then I'm doing some yoga or stretches or going for a run. And then in the evening, it's like it hits 8:30 and I'm in my room with my lights turned low. And like, I've got my candles going and I'm journaling and like, I'm all about the self-care. And did I do that when I was there? Like, no, I didn't do all of that. But did I meditate almost every day? Yes. Did I journal almost every day? Yes. Did I go out for a walk and take some alone time when I felt like I needed it? Yes. And so I'm flexible in what the time of those things is or how many of those things I do. But if I notice that I'm needing something in order to take care of myself, I make sure that that need is taken care of. Does that make sense?
Oh, it couldn't make more sense. This is going to be the hardest question of the whole thing for you. Are you ready?
Oh, man. If you're going to make me pick a favorite, I'm going to struggle.
I am your favorite plant.
Favorite plant. Oh, God.
I know.
This really is hard.
You can pick a few. Like, what are you loving right now? Like, what's like, it, like,
I mean,
tonight,
definitely
what are you going to
cook? Definitely always, like, top of my list is sweet potatoes. I probably eat, like, at least 2 sweet potatoes a day. And it's very
often. Okay. What do you do with your, that's a lot. What do you do with your sweet potatoes?
Most often I just bake a crap ton of them and then just eat them in different ways. But, you know, just add them to different like Buddha bowls and, but I'll have it for breakfast. I'll have it like with lunch. I'll have it as a snack. Like
all the
things.
Wait, tell me more. What are you doing with it for breakfast?
It's my favorite thing to take for a run. Dates and sweet potatoes, baby.
You take it on run? Okay. So you're running a lot of miles then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're like a runner, like a lot, like an, are you like an ultra runner or whatever they're called?
Yeah.
Oh,
like not
okay.
always. You know, my daily run, like I went for a run this morning, it was 6 miles, like chill pace. Like I'm not, but like, yes, I do regularly go for like longer runs.
What is, wait, I'm just curious now. What's a longer run? Like 20 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I can
20 miles.
Right. Like 20 miles is like a fine, like, cool, I'll just do that tomorrow kind of thing.
Oh my God. Okay. See, guys listening, it's all freaking relative. You know, today I ran 4 miles and it was beautiful and perfect. The most I run is like 6.5, 7. And when I do that, we celebrate it in my house like I just ran a marathon. Like,
yeah,
it is all freaking relative. Uh-huh. Don't compare yourself.
Yes. No comparison.
Stop it. But I just knew that because I don't bring snacks on my runs.
Right.
Like, yeah. I'm not bringing snacks for 4 miles. Post up at mile 2. Oh, let me have a few dates.
Sweet right.
Okay. That's wonderful. But what are you doing with a sweet potato for breakfast?
Oh, so dude. Okay. If you take a sweet potato, like a big sweet potato, and you put like tahini and cinnamon and like either like raisins or cacao nibs. Oh my gosh. It is heaven.
I'm feeling that. I can hear that for like a dessert too, or like a sweet uh-huh, dinner.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, it's great. So definitely sweet potatoes are on that list. And I mean, other than that, it's like just a lot of different fruits. Like I really, really am a fan of amazing fruit.
Amazing fruit.
Oh, and kombucha squash. Oh, I love some kombucha squash. It's so good.
So you really like the orange, the you know, roots.
Yeah, but it's funny because when you were saying orange, like, I don't even buy orange sweet potatoes most of the time anymore. Like, I'm a big fan of, like, the Japanese sweet potatoes, the purple sweet potatoes, the Hannah sweet potatoes. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it's a good life.
I love it. I love it. Okay, and now another favorite, a book that has really inspired you in an awesome way.
Ooh. Okay, wait. Let me think about this because I'm, like, a voracious reader. Like, I read close to a book a week. And I'm trying to think of books that I've read recently. Because I read a lot of books. Okay. So,
wait, but how are you also, sorry, think about that. But then how are you reading a book a week? Like, what is that? Is that part of your rigid but not rigid routine?
Uh-huh.
Nice.
So I, in the evenings, also it's not always a book a week, but like, I'm like looking at this. I keep track of the books that I read. So in 2020 so far, I've read 35 books.
I've read 13.
Amazing.
See, guys, don't compare yourself. I'm proud of myself.
So my favorite way to end the day is like an hour and a half before I want to be asleep, like going up to my room, turning on like the salt lamp and the fairy lights and like, you know, sometimes there's some like face moisturizer involved or some essential oils, whatever. And I journal. Get the thoughts out and take the chaos in my head and turn it into clarity. And there's some like spirituality involved in that as well. And then I just read until I'm ready to fall asleep. Reading is a joy for me and it helps me to wind down, to take my body away from any type of like stimulation or just like outward projection. It's very just like calm and soothing and enjoyable for me. And so I read in the evening before bed. And sometimes that's like books where I'm trying to learn something, you know, like a self-help book or a psychology book or a nutrition book. And other times it's just, you know, a romance novel or a pleasure read of some other kind. All of the above.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, my problem, I have to read in the morning because my problem is that 2 pages are enough to knock me out at night. And then that's not really making much progress.
Right. Yeah. Growing up, I really struggled with sleep. So the fact that I like fall asleep really easily now is in part due to my beautiful evening routine.
Nice.
But yeah, that's never a problem for me. Like my sister, when I meditate, she like, when she first started meditating, she would text me and be like, how do you not fall asleep when you meditate? And I was like, dude, you know, that's not an issue for me ever. Like, I like don't even
interesting.
Nap.
Oh, yeah, I don't nap either. But yeah, I can't do any of those activities at the evening because 2 minutes into meditation, I'd be done. 2 pages, I'm done. So it's all about morning for me. Again, everybody, do your thing.
Yep, exactly.
Interact with these things in your own way.
Mm-hmm. Honor your truth.
Yes. Okay. Well, that said, this was one. Oh, you didn't say a book. I was going to say bye.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Do you
Thank
want
you.
The book?
Yes, I want the book.
Okay. The book that I want to recommend is called Signs: The Secret Language of the Universe. And
no big deal.
Yes. This book So there are certain books that you read and you're like, wow, that's amazing. I'm going to tell my friends about this. And then there are other books where you read it and you're like, I am a different person now that I read this book. Wow. And that was me with this book. I mean, I've been growing a lot in my spirituality and my understanding of the world and all of that over the past 5 years in particular. But, you know, this book was definitely part of that process. And it is so good. It just makes you feel like just calm and safe and held by the universe. And, wow. You know, whatever greater whole that you believe in, it all fits in. And
what's it called again? Signs?
Signs, The Secret Light of the Universe. By Laura Lynn Jackson.
Is it woo-woo or is it like...
It's a little woo-woo.
A little woo?
It's not...
Like on the 0 to 10 woo scale, what would you call it?
Like a 5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're not getting into like quantum physics here or anything like that. We're just like, you know, yeah, maybe it's a 6 on the woo scale, but you
cranking
know.
Up. But that's pretty low compared to something. So
yeah,
that's great.
I think it's approachable.
Good. That's what we want. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, you are approachable. And now that's my closing statement. Where can everybody go to keep up with you? Check out your academy, which sounds phenomenal. And just, you know, really stay in the know of you. You're very active on Insta. So is that where people should go? Where should they go?
Thanks. Yeah. Instagram is definitely the main space where you can connect with me. That's where I spend most of my time on social media. So Instagram is the place. It's just at Tara Kemp. And if you want to check out my website or learn more about Reconnect Academy, which is open for enrollment for the next 5 days, and then probably not again till early 2021, but that's reconnectcollective.com/academy.
Nice. Okay. So reconnectcollective.com/academy and Tara Kemp on Instagram. And the academy closes, what, November 1st? No more?
Yeah. Yeah. So The next round of Reconnect Academy starts next Monday, November 2nd.
Got it. Wonderful. Well, Tara, thank you so much. This lit me up.
This was such a juicy, good, just warm and fuzzy conversation. So thank you for having me. I've loved connecting with you and sharing all about the things that I'm so passionate about.
Warm and cozy like a sweet potato.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Not that I hid my poker cards at all, but I'm a little obsessed with Tara's use of the word interact as it relates to food. It's just so good. And I realized at the end, as we were comparing our runs and I kept saying, don't compare, what I really meant was don't feel bad about yourself in the comparison. Like, you can notice the differences, but try to own your ownness and not despair that your you-ness is not the same as her-ness, you know? Well, that is a wrap on yet another chat about the sheer magnificence of plants. And I'm just really proud of these old guys. I mean, they're really something special, those plants. And as I've now recorded 201 episodes of this show, it really doesn't cease to amaze me just how many aspects to plants' power there are to discuss. Plants for the win. And if you want to win with plants, please check out my 6-month-old best-selling book with 100+ plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies and stories to help you eat healthier without hating your life. It's called Party in Your Plants, and it is available wherever books are sold, including the show notes of this episode at partyinmyplants.com/201 or simply at partyinyourplants.com.